And welcome to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Tonight, Eric Kirk is our host. As always, you can call and contribute at 826-4805, or if you're out of the area, toll free at 800-640-5911, or to our text line at 492-KHSU.
Thank you, Michael. All right, my guest tonight is Alan McCloskey. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for having me, Eric.
All right, he is a local labor union representative, are you, or just in that, and an activist within the Democratic Party. Came in kind of with the Bernie thing. I mean, you've been a Democrat, but active within the party. Why don't you tell the story?
Sure. So, yeah, active in the party for sure. I've always been a registered Democrat all my life, and the last couple of years have been fortunate enough to be elected by the people of Assembly District 2 as an Assembly delegate to the state party.
All right. What I wanted to do tonight is we're about to enter into yet another election campaign. We just seem to leave one. We had one in June. We got a little bit of a break in the summer there, but we're about to come into another one, and we'll talk about some of those races. But I kind of wanted to get your take. You're a lifelong person here. You left for a while, and maybe some of the years you kind of missed. I can even kind of fill in. But Humboldt County, you know, when I was a kid, I sort of remember it as being a pretty conservative place outside of Arcata because it's a university town, and maybe some of the hills in southern Humboldt because a lot of hippies moved out there and with the Back to the Land movement. But it's been fairly conservative, maybe with some kind of progressive labor aspects back through history, you know, turn of the century, World War One, and the rest, when Eureka actually elected some socialists. And then I believe there was some a flurry of union activity in the 30s, but it's been fairly conservative coming on up to the turn of the 21st century. You were around when Paul Gallegos won, defeated Terry Farmer, who had been the incumbent district attorney since forever. And Paul Gallegos got in and immediately attempted to prosecute Pacific Lumber for some, you know, issues. And before the ink was dry on anything, there was a recall effort, went down in flames. And for a while, there was a flurry of progressive activity, elections of Chris Kerrigan and Larry Glass onto the Eureka City Council. But still, you would say that the conservative centrists pretty much held their ground. There was a brief period of time where you could say there was a progressive majority on the Board of Supervisors. But then through what, I don't know if you know Shane Britton, who was, Britton, famously or infamously at a building one time referred to as an unholy alliance between dope growers and developers, that was undone. And sort of at least on local issues, conservative majority reclaimed the Board of Supervisors, I think 2012, with Estelle Fennell's defeat of Cliff Clendenin and Virginia Bass's defeat of Bonnie Neely, actually earlier than that, and with the 5th District going the way it did. Now, we've had a bit of a turnaround. Of course, the 3rd District has always been fairly progressive. We've had a bit of a turnaround recently with Steve Madrone's win over Ryan Sundberg. I shouldn't forget his name yet. Ryan Sundberg. And there are some very interesting city council races. There is now a progressive majority in the Eureka City Council, and there's a lot going on.
Have you seen the slate of people that are running for the Eureka positions?
Yes.
Can't keep track of it. There's so many.
It's large. It's large. There's a lot of them, but there are definitely some ideological differences between them, and it's going to be some interesting races, and it's probably going to get pretty intense. So I just wanted to kind of look and say where are we at. And we have, of course, I need to let people know that if I should slip and reveal my biases, that in no way tonight's discussion, that in no way reflects KHSU, which is a nonprofit entity and does not endorse candidates. I'm going to try to keep that in check not tell who I endorse or any of that. But there is a a ballot initiative that is coming on the ballot, Measure K, which is involving the mobilization for possibly the first time in years, if ever, in Humboldt County of Latino voters who are a significant part of the population, even the voting population, and or at least will be. And we have a rebellion in, you know, wanting to take the statue down in Arcata. And we have a statewide ballot measure 10. A lot of progressive issues on, even though, you know, locally we're not really dealing with any congressional candidates. There's not going to be any change of party in any congressional or other races that are going to affect national issues. We are fighting some of those national issues on a local level. And so I wanted to invite you here to kind of get your take on whether or not you think there's a realignment, a change, a new kind of change happening in Humboldt County, at least potentially?
Oh, I think so, definitely. And I think we, you know, as we look back at our political successes that we've had here recently with the, Measure V, which mm-hmm. established the fee stabilization here across the county for the mobile home parks.
Yes.
We look at our success with Measure P, making the city of Eureka a true ward system.
Right.
Which I was a big advocate for, by mm-hmm. the way. I mean, anything we can be doing to make the democratic process and these elected positions more readily available to everyday working class people like you and I, I think that's just a positive thing, and I think yeah. we showed that with Measure P.
And ward elections, of course, make it so that you don't have to raise as much money to do a citywide election. You can, you're really, the only way to win it is to go house to house and win hearts and minds.
Right, exactly. Yes. So it should be interesting to see how these elections work with yeah. the new ward system in place here in Eureka for November.
Right.
And then, of course, our success, as you mentioned, with Steve Madrone for yes. the County Board of Supervisors. Congratulations, Steve.
Steve Madrone, barely.
Right, yeah. right. But nonetheless... Barely or not, I don't give a damn, as long as he
it's
won.
It's a win, and so it's a tough one. And Karen Paz Dominguez was also a very a bright spot on a number of levels.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Certainly. We are very happy with that campaign
right.
success.
Right, and may also be a blow against entrenched kind of, I don't know how to say it, but, you know, good old boy local government. It's it could be a break from, you know, the way things are done around here.
Well, you know, really, it's encouraging to me because it says to me and the others that are working within the party, but with also within the framework of labor here locally and the different alliances politically, that our work is paying off.
Yeah.
That people are paying attention. And, you know, that's really, I think that's one of the biggest positives, if you will, that I've seen come out of Trump being elected,
sure.
is that people are so miffed about everything that administration is doing that they're paying attention. You know, voters, progressive voters, are becoming more and more engaged. And I think the more that we continue to engage people, the more we continue to bring people into politics, I think we're going to see things continue to go in the progressive direction here locally.
Now, you mentioned before the show we had a little bit of a discussion. You kind of got into party politics with the Bernie campaign, is that?
Yeah, right around the time that Bernie was running for president.
Which, of course, Humboldt County had the highest percentage of voters for him of any county in the state.
Right, right. So that tells you that we have a strong progressive voter base here mm-hmm. If we had that many people coming out for Bernie. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what the future holds with these upcoming elections
right.
And to build on the success and the momentum that we've seen here locally.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we shocked the local establishment pretty good when we got Steve Madrone in there and Karen. I
yes.
don't think they were seeing either one of those wins coming.
No, and that was and she didn't just win barely. She aced it.
Yeah, I mean, she sure did.
And one of the things that came out of the Bernie campaign as well was the campaign kind of morphed into what is now the North Coast People's Alliance, which is a very strong. I mean, they've got a good win record going with Measure V. And,
sure. Yeah. And no. I mean, there's several entities here. You know, mm-hmm. And many of them I work with in my capacity as a delegate.
Right.
I try to participate in as many of their different groups and their gatherings. You know, we got the Humboldt Progressive Democrats. We've got Indivisible Ferndale. By the way, I was just down at a meeting with them recently at one of their members' home in Ferndale. And let me tell you, when those people get together, most of the meetings I go to, it's hard to get people to engage, right?
Right.
To always show up to the meetings. Indivisible Ferndale, there must have been 60 people in that gal's house. I was amazed at their turnout.
Right.
So there's a lot of progressive groups that are doing a lot of good things. And the more that those groups can look at the opportunities to work together to find common ground and to get behind truly progressive candidates to take on the incumbents or the establishment folks, I think we're going to continue to see more and more political success, as we did with Steve, as we saw with Karen. Austin, a lot of different people.
Well, there was a local activist who was involved in an organization called Local Solutions, which was a progressive attempt, which I want to talk a little bit more about in a little bit. But Dennis Huber, unfortunately, passed away. He's from Southern Humboldt, but he was an activist, and he always said, you know, he was always trying to get candidates, and people would say, "Why are you trying to get a candidate to run for that position? They can't win." And he always said, "Well, they can't win. We can't win if we don't have somebody in the ballot. That's for sure. We know that. Other than that, you don't know what's going to happen." Right?
Yeah, I always go back to the saying of Shirley Chisholm. You know, when she said, "You don't make change standing on the sidelines whimpering and complaining. You make change by getting involved."
Right.
And that's my biggest thing, is to get people engaged, get them involved, and make sure that they're informed.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many people just vote party preference or vote one side or the other just based on what they know of the person. We really need to be engaged, paying attention, following people's voting records, and follow the money, for goodness sakes. You know, look at where some of these campaign dollars are coming from for these individuals that are running for office. You know, recently, many of the groups that we just talked about, between my efforts, their efforts, our collective efforts, we were able to keep Virginia Bass and Rex Bone from reappointing their wealthy campaign financer, Lee Lancey, to the Planning Commission. I'm sure you remember when that was going on.
Yes. Yeah, well, I do. And Leo Lancey was instrumental in what I would consider the defeat of the prior progressive, with the money bombs that he created. I mean, all of the candidates found themselves up, even at that time, Mark Lovelace, mm-hmm. although he prevailed, but Mark and Cliff Clendenin both, and I think others, found themselves up against $30,000 out of the gate.
Right.
That he managed to put together. Credit him for being able to raise that money, but it didn't come from you and me. It came mm-hmm. from people who definitely have interests in things being a certain way.
Well, and that's what I'm most excited about here locally, is that if we continue to work together, I mean, we're going to push things in the right direction, and we're going to restore our local elected positions to be working for the public, not for special interests, not for wealthy developers, not for corporate cannabis, but for you and I, the mm-hmm. people of Humboldt. I mean, we are the fabric of this community, and somewhere along the line, I think the electeds have lost track of the fact that they are elected by us and they're working for us. They're there to do the work of the people.
Now, Ryan Sundberg, of course, was in for two terms. He narrowly defeated Pat Cleary 8 years ago. 4 years ago, he defeated a Sharon Latour. But one thing that that Sharon Latour's campaign revealed was, because she came in at the last minute, had no money, was an outsider, wasn't really up, it wasn't somebody running. It was like people just said, "We need somebody to run," and mm-hmm. they went to her. And even with that, she got close to 40% of the vote, which said something. It said something that, you know, hey, there are people who are looking at what he's doing, not really happy with the compromises he's made to certain types of power, and I do actually believe that she helped set the stage for somebody to come in, Steve Madrone, who's been here for 40 years, mm-hmm. been active in water preservation issues, and smart, and put together an incredible campaign, mm-hmm. A model one, got to just about every house within any kind of, it's hard to say, I come from the Bay Area, too. I don't really consider any part of Humboldt County urban, but by comparison, urban, right. McKinleyville and Trinidad, where he was from. That he made it close against, bit of money, but actually managed to catch up in financing as well, with a lot of low-level donations. If you organize well, you can get those.
And yeah, no, Steve had a Steve. That was a great campaign. Mm-hmm. And, Steve is a I don't think we could have asked for a better candidate, honestly. Mm-hmm. And, Steve, very hands-on, You know, there's not a part of that campaign that he wasn't aware of or wasn't intricately involved in. But I would also share that, you know, behind his success is the local Democratic Party.
Right.
The progressive folks, North Coast People's Alliance, the Indivisible groups, the Move to Amend, the list goes on.
Green Party, so, too.
Green Party as well. Yeah. So we were all behind Steve. And that success speaks volumes to our ability to work together.
And that's a good point to make on. But I'm going to do a little bit of station ID really quickly. You're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk. My guest is Alan McCloskey. We are talking about the state of progressive politics in Humboldt County. If you want to join in the conversation, the phone number is 826-4805. Or if you're out of the area, it's 1-800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. They are, of course, on the KHSU website in case you didn't get that down. And if you'd like to text in a message, if you're shy or just don't want to be on the air, you can call 492-KHSU. That's 492-KHSU if you have a question or a comment for Alan McCloskey. I want to talk a little bit about people working together because I think what I like to refer to as the left, and you know, of course, left and right is kind of an oversimplification, a holdover from the French Revolution when a bunch of socialists were sitting in the left wings of the seats and a bunch of conservatives were sitting in the right wing of the seats, and so right wing and left wing sort of that has defined politics, but it's a lot more complicated than that. But there is something. That I consider to be a problem on the left. I've referred to it as the Sisyphus complex. Sisyphus was, I may even be pronouncing his name wrong, but a Greek mythical figure who, when he died, his eternal punishment was that he keeps rolling a rock up the hill and it keeps rolling down and he has to keep rolling it up again. Well, one of the things the left is famous for is its circular firing squads. And I will tell you, I was here because we were making really good progress on the progressive end on city elections and county elections, and the coalition fell. I'm not going to get into whose fault it was and all the names, but it fell apart. It split into two groups, and there were a lot of egos involved, and I don't even know what all the issues were behind the issues, but we tend to do that. We get successful and then we implode. We do what are called the circular firing squads, and you know, and the question is, it doesn't always have to happen. There have been times, I mean, there's always going to be arguments, disagreements. There's ideological differences between different approaches and the rest. But how do we avoid that? And I think there have been coalitions around the country who've managed to avoid it, you know, maybe not being completely functional. No family is totally functional, right? But without being self-destructive. How do we avoid that?
Well, I think we have to be open to being open to disagreeing. Mm-hmm. A prime example is this last Board of Supervisors race, right, where we had an incumbent running for re-election, mm-hmm. and we ended up with two progressives running against that incumbent. And so when that happens, unfortunately, the result is usually what we saw happen in this last race.
Although it shouldn't have mattered mathematically, because if both of them together had gotten more than 50% of the vote, you know, it didn't matter which one you voted for, it would have gotten one of them into a runoff.
Right. But my point is now, you know, after this race, we have to continue to work together and find where we can support one another and support each other's candidates, mm-hmm. Irregardless of how that race ended up turning out. So
right.
I know there were some folks that were pretty miffed about how that whole situation was handled, but my point is, you know, we got to move past that, and we got to mm-hmm. we got to pick up our tools and get to work on the next election and get behind the candidates.
Sure. I think it's kind of easy. It didn't matter if they were stealing each other's votes. The only mm-hmm. question is whether or not they were attacking each other such that votes went to Virginia Bass.
Right.
I don't know that.
Well,
really
it's kind of, go back to the Hillary and the Bernie conversation, yeah. right? I can't tell you how many times I'm in meetings, mm-hmm. whether it's at the state party level or local, where it kind of goes back to that. And it's like, are we still there? You know, have we not moved past that? There's so much we could be working on.
And this is the thing. my problem with Bernie was I thought he treated her with kid gloves. I thought he was too soft with her. I mean, he let her off the hook on the email thing, which, you know, and granted it was blown over, but there were some issues there.
Well, no, I mean, to give it context, you just have to go back and watch some of the debates between her and Obama,
yeah,
or some of the comments that Obama threw her way.
I mean, the 2008 one was nasty, and it didn't seem to end. It just went on and on, and she was using talking points right off of Fox News, you know, about Bill Ayers and Bernadette Dorn, the connection, who, by the way, have a Humboldt County connection. They come here every once in a while. They own property and
okay.
get spotted at the co-op every once in a while. But yeah, they were together, head of Students for Democratic Society, and then they were in the Weatherman. It's, you know, they're controversy, but they came up and they did whatever time they had to do, and now they're active, and they're effectively active in Chicago. So, yes, Obama had some connections with them. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. But, yeah, she used that against him, the preacher that Obama went to. And quite frankly, I think what happened was Obama was realizing he was running for higher office and said, I can't do it if I'm not in a church. Oh, there's a church, and walked into it, didn't know anything about the guy. You know, that's, and so the guy was a little on the crazy end, but the point is that she was relentless on that. I mean, that was it. And yet it didn't defeat him in November.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much gets remembered in November. I think the blame is that the Bernie voters didn't come out to vote for her, but you have to earn those votes. You don't get them. I think most of the Bernie voters voted for her, either reluctantly or maybe even with some enthusiasm. But the point is you got to earn those votes. You got to earn, you know, you're not entitled to them. And that's, you know, something that was missing. She needed to make that appeal. She chose to take a different approach,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Well, you know, I mean, when we talk about the context or the concept, excuse me, of working together, you know, it resonates with me personally as well. You know, when you think about my position in the state party, the Democratic Party.
Yes.
And, you know, going back to Steve Madrone's race, you know, unfortunately, our highest ranking elected officials here in the party,
all three of them
chose to endorse the incumbent, who
without even
is,
talking to you.
Right. No, well, yes and no. I mean, they carried out the final endorsement, right, without talking to us. But we met with Mike McGuire, myself, and Alain Rivier, Leslie Esther, and a handful of other delegates from our district here. And we specifically talked about endorsements, and that we would like to, for them as our Democratic electeds, to engage us, the local central committee, to engage us as the elected delegates to see where are the constituents at. Where is that support falling? And they entertained the conversation, and then, you know, when all was said and done, they chose to endorse the incumbent. Now, there are members of the executive board to the California State Party who have filed a charge with the Rules Committee.
Yes, right.
And so that's currently under review. And, you know, I wanted to cover this while I'm here because I want this to be part of the narrative, part of the dialogue. The establishment folks are trying to associate the letter or the call for review to the Rules Committee as an attack on our electeds. But it's not. In fact, to the contrary, I think it's a matter of political accountability. And I think, you know, unfortunately, our electeds have, I don't know if you want to say, gotten comfortable or complacent with regards to the state platform and the state party rules.
Right.
And now that someone's actually raising the flag to hold them accountable, they want to characterize it as an attack. When in reality, I would have hoped for all three of them to take responsibility for the endorsement and the act of disregarding the endorsement of the local central committee.
Right.
And working contrary to the interest and the desire of the local party, to contrary to the interest of labor. By the way, they also said they would communicate with the Humboldt and Delnor Central Labor Council before those endorsements came out. And I sit on the Central Labor Council, and those communications never,
sure,
never took place. So now we're trying to address that issue. And my thing is, we can move past these things. We can move on, and, you know, we could have great success on some of our political future endeavors. But we've got to address these things. And the
right.
reason is that we can't have our highest elected officials here in our district working against the progressive movement here locally. And I hope, you know, I hope they get that. You know, I will say of the three, Congressman Huffman was, you know, kind enough to reach out to Steve and acknowledge that, you know, maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. So I think of the three, he's probably the one that's you know, taking responsibility for the act per se.
Well, good. And this is an example of you can disagree. You go through the processes and then you move on, because I believe the local Democratic Party, which may be, according to some, considered one of the problem children by the state, yes, but which is fine. There's other counties that are also
well. Actually, to give you some perspective on that, you know, Alain Rivier, who's an assembly district delegate, just like myself, but she also sits on the rules committee for the state party, and the vast majority of the central committees across the state, their bylaws are not compliant with that of the state party, including Humboldt County. And so we've been requesting of the local central committee chair, Bob Service, to initiate a process by which those bylaws can be amended and then reviewed by the rules committee and then hopefully eventually certified to be compliant. But we're getting some pushback to that request, and I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that November's there's an election. These people are running for re-election, and they don't want anything to interfere with that.
Although the local party did endorse those three, even as they're filing
and as a result of those three endorsing the incumbent, who's not a Democrat, by the way. The local party ended up spending a considerable amount of resources to offset those endorsements by sending out mailers and such to support Steve and his endeavor to become our next supervisor. And, you know, at the end of the day, we prevailed. I'm very happy about it. But going forward in the future with other supervisorial races, with other local races, we need to make sure that all the ducks are in a row and everything is lined up. And you know, if the bylaws were compliant, there would be we'd have a stronger position to be able to hold these three accountable for the act of endorsing a non-Democrat.
And I'm not even going to pretend to understand how the party structure works. It's probably
I'm probably going to get a lot of hell for bringing this up tonight, but so be it. There's never a wrong time to do the right thing.
It's out there, and it needs, again, it needs sunlight's the best disinfectant, right? You need to discuss these things to bring them to resolution. Discussion of these issues should not be the divisive point. You should be able to disagree and go through the process.
I'm bringing you to the next Central Committee meeting.
It is kind of interesting, and yes, there are vast differences within the Democratic Party, as there are within the movement as a whole, because you'll sit in a room being active on something, and you'll be sitting with Green Party members, and you'll be sitting with that. So it's not about that you only support people within your party. It's that it's with the endorsement process that you.
Yeah, it's with the actual formality in the endorsement process where it gets a little tricky. At least you know, if you're going to act in compliance with the bylaws. And so when you have your delegate status to the state party and you endorse a non-Democrat, that's where it gets sticky. That's where there could be grounds to petition the party to revoke your credential delegate status to the state party. So,
well, you know, we should talk a little bit about, because there is this now strong, I think, progressive push, and I think some of the more conservative to moderate elements are feeling it, and I think they're planning to push back. They're not going down without a fight.
Well, exactly. I mean, when you look at what's going on with the city of Eureka right now with all the candidates running, it's apparent that the conservative end of the spectrum is going to continue to push until they get somebody in there.
Right. Well, and you noticed Mr. Fulton, $14,000 he raised already.
Fullerton.
$14,000 he raised, according to the Las Cosas Outpost.
That's what I read. I
don't even know what you're going to do with the money in a ward election. I mean, I guess you could do radio and
well, I don't know. I mean, I think with the conservative folks, they tend to think that if they have a big amount in the kitty, then they're guaranteed a win. But I think if history has shown anything, it's that if the progressives get out there and really work hard together, if they canvass and knock on doors, they're going to have success.
Right.
Now, we will see how, you know, we push really hard for Measure P so that Eureka became a true award system, right? So, you know, it's going to also open up the door for someone like John Fullerton to run for city council and just be able to focus on one ward with $14,000.
Yeah, so well, that's why in San Francisco, when they're fighting for district elections, and they had him for a while, and then they lost him because the most conservative member of that came in on the district elections ended up killing one of the most liberal members. You know, we know that history. And so they ended district elections for a long time until the grassroots movement brought it back. But it was kind of an alliance of neighborhood leftists and Republicans, because Republicans felt like that was their best chance to get somebody in, maybe in the Sunset District or the Marina District or whatever. Turns out they don't have any chance anywhere in the city anymore, but that's what they were hoping for. So it's possible that he could do that. But I looked at the ward, and I live in that ward, and it goes all the way to about 14th Street, I believe, in there. So that cuts into a fairly progressive area of Eureka as well. It's got the
But it's also
South
got the
Harris.
Larger, more conservative.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. He's running against Natalie Arroyo.
And then also Jeannie Breslin is in that same district. And those, between John and Jeannie, those are two conservative folks.
Which,
so it should be.
They're usually more practical than that on the conservative side. So I'm wondering why they're splitting each other's votes. Jeannie Breslin is I believe, Take Back Eureka.
Yeah, right.
And so it's very interesting. So he's got the money. She's got the backing of that. So that's going to be an interesting race to watch.
When I first heard they were both filing, you know, I was kind of shocked because I thought they were kind of from the same camp. Mm-hmm. But in talking to folks, it appears that the two of them have a pretty decent disdain for one another. So,
and maybe there are the different constituencies. And so the question is you know, how much Natalie Arroyo is probably one of the stronger progressive candidates we've had. She won her initial election pretty easily. Now it's interesting because now it makes her election a little bit tougher than it would have been. I think she would have no problem winning a citywide.
Yeah, I almost wished I could have been on the committee of folks that from the public that served on the redistricting.
Oh, the redistricting.
Yeah, so I could have seen, you know, the rhyme and reason for how they came up with these new reward systems. Yeah.
I don't know. You can actually go to the Lost Coast Outpost and find it. They've got a map there and find out who you're in, because it did put a couple of the city council members in the same ward and the rest. But I think one of them is actually running for mayor now, and you've got an interesting race for mayor between Susan and
Susan Seaman and Heidi Messner.
And Messner, and then the Take Back Eureka woman.
Her name escapes me at the moment.
I'm forgetting it too. But I'm sure we'll know it by the fall. But and then Ward 1 has four candidates, is what I'm understanding so far.
I saw that. I've not met with all of them, but I've spent a great deal of time talking with Leslie Castellano. Very nice gal.
Yes,
she's been involved with several things, you know, activity wise here in the political realm.
And that also that race also has Anthony Mantova, who is of a little bit of a different political.
A little bit, I'd say a lot.
I was being facetious. and then a couple of others are in that race as well. I'm going to remind everybody that we're listening to KHSU. This is Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk. My guest, Alan McCluskey, and we are talking progressive politics. If you want to join the conversation, 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. And I imagine there might be a number of people out there saying, an election again? Can't we get through August? But, you know, we're not just talking about the election. We're talking general, where we're at. I mean, it really does feel like the morale for a while there of progressives in Humboldt County were down. We'd lost the majority in the Board of Supervisors, lost some other elections, didn't have the majority in the Eureka City Council, possibly back to 1920. different things, it didn't go well. But the passage of Measure V, I mean, I never thought, it's basically a rent control measure, and I never thought I'd see a rent control measure that didn't get passed in something other than an urban or a university town.
Mm-hmm.
This is remarkable.
Well, I think as we continue to see things unfold, I know for a lot of the voters that I talk to, it's not a something like Measure V is not. A lot of the voters aren't looking at it in the context of it being, you know, oh, this is a Republican issue or a
right.
Democratic issue or a Green Party issue. This is a human issue. You know, the fact that our most vulnerable citizens, our elderly, our disabled, who live in some of the mobile home parks here across the county, were in my opinion being targeted by some of the wealthy individuals and developers that own some of our mobile home parks. So the fact that we were able to be successful with that campaign measure, I think speaks to that interpretation, that this really comes, a lot of these things come down to this is a human issue.
Right. But rent control is usually opposed by landlords, and not all landlords are rich, of course, but it does provide that you can cover your costs and mortgage. Most rent control provisions do. You can cover the mortgage and the taxes and the insurance and then profit over that. But most people who invest in real estate are really going for the equity anyways. They buy it so they can sell it years down the road. They're not trying to make money off it as a rental unless it's a duplex kind of thing and you're living there and it helps helps you live there. And so, you know, but there is talk now of trying to have a countywide rent control measure, but one that suits Humboldt County, because what works in Los Angeles or Santa Cruz or Berkeley may not work in Humboldt County, so we really need to think about it.
Yeah, and there's also got to be a conscious, determined effort by our electeds, you know, by our Board of Supervisors, to seek opportunity for development. You know, we really have no housing stock here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the price of real estate and when you look at the lack of options when you go to buy a home,
right?
It's. I mean, McKinleyville's about the only area where you're really going to be able to pick up new development. Eureka almost needs, I think, to annex more land base before they really look at doing any major new
right.
development. But yeah, we've got to build that housing stock.
We do. Of course, we've got to have jobs for people too. People aren't going to build houses until we've got, you know, an economic base again. Logging is gone. Marijuana's collapsing.
Yeah, but the biggest industry, healthcare. You know,
yeah.
We're constantly monitoring that. You know, as a union steward, that's something that I pay close attention to, and the fact that. I mean, my goodness, our largest private sector employer is St. Joseph Health,
mm-hmm.
which recently merged with Providence and is in talks to merge with other healthcare corporations.
Right.
So we need to, what I'm getting at about the good paying jobs is continue to look for opportunities where we can partner with unions, where we can help with the unionization
right.
Of facilities because, you know, when you look at what unions were able to accomplish for the working class people, just in our lifetimes.
Sure.
We need to continue to fight and support the unions to continue to unionize facilities like St. Joe and like Breas Healthcare. You know, Breas is a large corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard them. The folks, they own the vast majority of the care home, long-term care facilities here in our area.
Right.
To continue to try and approach that opportunity to unionize them so our local people are getting paid a truly living wage. You know, speaking of Breas, they've recently been bringing in individuals from outside of the country. The Pacific Rehab, right across from the old General Hospital in Eureka,
right.
is now a housing facility for international labor. So instead of Breas engaging our local people, having a job fair, bringing people in, they've brought individuals from outside of the country to work in these facilities, and they're
yeah.
housing them at Pacific Rehab. And
well, I think one of the hopes that some people had for development, well, it wasn't industrial, and we don't want to just be a retirement community, but was the idea that we would receive a lot of equity refugees, and we got them for a while. People, baby boomers retiring, sell their house for $2 million in the Bay Area and come up and buy a house here and live off the rest. But they'll only do it if there's good medical, you know, and a lot of them, whatever jobs they had down there as teachers or whatever, they had Kaiser, they don't want to give that up, right? So I there needs to be more flexibility that you can be on a Kaiser plan and still be able to use local medical, you know, that kind of thing. But that's got to be a reform, you know, on the national or state level, obviously. But those are things we fight for. But you know what, and certainly it's going to, the need is increasing every year as the population does age. But what do we do about not having the population simply age, about bringing families in? Do you have an idea as to, like, okay, so logging isn't what it used to be, cannabis isn't what it used to be. What do we do?
Well, you know, in the cannabis realm, I think that our electeds, again, kind of dropped the ball with regards to setting up regulatory framework that welcomed compliance, that brought right. people out from the black market. The non-compliance or non-conformity to the regulatory framework that the Board of Supervisors approved or signed off on, it's not shown a great deal of success. I mean, look at every day you turn on Lost sure. Coast or you turn on something, you're reading about another illegal grow, another illegal bust or pollution, contamination. The list goes on.
And they made it expensive for the
They
small
made it
grower.
Expensive. And so by the very nature of the framework that they've established, they've pushed out the local growers.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to...
favoring the mega grows that are sucking up the river's dry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it is a really bad situation. But part of the problem, too, is that there's just such – the more legal it becomes, there is a glut on cannabis. There's just – and resolving that, I don't know, what are the possibilities of trying to, without having to take over like it did in the Bay Area, trying to draw high-tech in here? Now, we got to fix the internet situation.
Yeah, we got to do something about the internet, that's
yeah,
for sure.
That's, but, it, you know, is there a way we can sort of tap into that and bring it in, you know, as a way of... you know, it's just something that people can do when they graduate from our local university if they decide they want to stay. I'm trying to think in terms of what we can do towards that. What should we be attracting? I know that Oracle about 15 years ago went out and looked at Samoa.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing ever came of it. And I always wondered why our leaders, elected and non-elected, weren't on the phone with them saying, okay, why were you interested? What made you not interested? Mm-hmm. What were you looking? What would you see in this community? And that doesn't mean we have to do everything. Maybe
right, but what could we be doing to maybe have you come back and take a second look?
Take a second look.
And let's talk about getting you in here. Yeah,
right. Or somebody like you. I mean, you know, that nobody got on the phone and asked that. You know, it just seemed kind of myopic. And I just, you know, we got to think in terms of a future for this county. We have declining enrollments in the schools, and you know, half of the schools in Eureka are empty buildings right now. Some of them asbestos traps. You know, so it's just that can't even be torn down right now. And so. We need to really try to think in terms of a vision. What do we want to come here? Now, maybe we don't need an industrial base or something like that. Maybe we could try to come up with a model that encourages all kinds of things. People have their organic farms, their textiles, their things that they're selling, small-time tech, you know, solar power and alternative energy has been a big thing around here. And maybe it doesn't, we don't need to roll in to have a factory that hires 4,000 people, so we have to give them, you know, big tax breaks and all that to roll in the carpet. But we have to come up with something, some idea and a goal to attain it. And I'm not an expert in those areas, but...
Well, neither am I. But listen, we should be having conversations. We should be having conversations with people that do. And the county elected should be looking at engaging the services of individuals that can help us build our capacity to attract...
something.
An export of some kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We have our first caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I've recently spoken with a young man who I asked him what he did. He said he's a boat builder. And that got me really thinking a lot. We've got a beautiful, tranquil bay. We've got some industrial set up out on the Samoa Peninsula that is standing vacant. And it's been developed partially for some very good productive projects.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, we have a beautiful, tranquil bay. we have a lot of wood. Why don't we have a boat building project? Why don't we have a boat building class at CR like they have the home construction class? And I really would like to hear you, the two of you, boot around some ideas about local developments using local materials, something like Marimba One, which is a huge success. So I just thought I would call in and suggest that.
Yeah, it's an idea. I mean, and again, it might not be that we have a big thing cranking out thousands, but if we did have, say, we have these facilities, we have the bay, we have the water, which makes it that if we had these, if we promoted these classes and developments, then a few of them would probably open up smaller businesses. And small business is the big ticket. Ultimately, they hire more people than big business do across
the
country.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not proposing a big factory.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, a big factory
boat
building project, but I'm taking a more craftsman approach.
Mm-hmm.
I think we also could have more development of some of our wonderful furniture craftsmen. I mean, there's a lot of talent in this area, and I'd like to see it promoted.
Thank you. Yeah, we do have, there is a small business incubation kind of fun thing, and maybe we need to really, have it as a part of a comprehensive development policy. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things we need to do. I mean, when you come into Eureka on the southern end, it's got a suicide-inspiring landscape. It's just really ugly. And any time we've tried to bring it up with supervisors or even city council people, a lot of times they just say, well, that's private property. We can't do anything. That's not true. There are efforts that can be made on a collective level to talk about, let's make this prettier. And usually private property owners don't object to making their property prettier. So, you know, more plants, something a little bit festive with the theme. But it's just, you come in from that, and it's just not welcoming. You come in, you've got some industry, a few restaurants, gas station, an ugly mall, I'm sorry. And it doesn't...
Well, it kind of goes, recently there was a big to-do about the mid-sized cruise ship vessel that came into Humble Bay. You know, if we're going to look to attract that industry... Right, as a form of
bringing money
into the county or into the city, then we've got to build the capacity for that. You know what I mean? There has to be some kind of ecotourism that goes along with that.
Sure.
There's got to be cannabis tourism that goes along with
something that.
Something
that is unique to Humboldt
County.
Right.
They're
going to
want to come.
I want to go on a cruise that comes to Humboldt County because blah blah blah. Yeah, we've got our trails and they'll come for that. But something that it makes. I mean, there was a bunch of money spent to make Old Town pretty, and it does look a lot prettier than it did when I first moved here. That it's got to spark. And now the other thing that's being proposed that just won't seem to die is the idea of this East-West Railroad.
Mm.
And I went to Anthony Montoya's place, and I'm looking for the question that Hank Sims asked on Lost Coast Outposts years ago, or maybe it was when he was with the North Coast Journal, but it's sort of like, okay, we've got all this stuff about the train and all the stuff. What is it going to carry? I mean, that's what we got to think of. You know, almonds, pot. I mean, what is it going to do? If you got a plan for that, then I'm willing to entertain it. But what are we taking to the I-5 corridor, or taking from the I-5 corridor? Nobody has an answer to that. As an alternative port that's somehow cheaper or somehow advantageous over it, that they'll take to I-5 and then take stuff to San Francisco or up to Portland?
Well, and it's not like we're talking about reinventing the wheel here. You know, the powers that be should be dialoguing with other municipalities and looking at other examples where they've lost their industries. You know, the one that comes to mind for me is Tofino, Canada. Up at the very end of Vancouver Island there. You look at what they were able to accomplish. You know, their fishing industry is not what it was. The timber industry there is not what it was. And so they've reinvented themselves as a tourism destination.
Yeah.
And it can be done. It just takes the right folks to get together to put that plan together. And
right.
I just don't think we have it. I wish we did.
Right.
And I think we could. But we just got to get the powers that be in the right room and get a plan put together. Because right now it's just kind of a, make something happen. Maybe they'll come.
Well, I agree. I'm going to give out the phone numbers one last time. This is KHSU. You're listening to Thursday Night Talk. My name is Eric Kirk, Alan McCloskey. We're talking about visioning. I mean, we're talking about politics and the state of progressives, but the whole thing is, what is our vision for Humboldt County? That's really what it's about, ultimately. If you've got anything to say about any of what we've talked about or questions, phone number is 826-4805 or 800-640-5911. That's 826-4805 or 800-640-5911, or if you want to text in a message to be read over the air or a question, it's 492 KHSU. So I hate to be critical because it's a lot easier to say, oh, this should be done. People should be contacting Oracle. People should be looking into you know, these opportunities for tourism or anything. But we do need to really talk about it. It wasn't our general plan. We got into a lot of it was preservation, controlled growth, environmentalism, and then we almost had one, and then the next 5-6 years was spent undoing most of what had been put in there to put on less restrictions. And so, okay, we have this general plan, and we're supposed to have less restrictions to encourage all of this development, right? You know, and so I'm kind of scared. Okay, what kind of development are we going to have? Well, we don't seem to be having a whole lot. I see some building, but not a whole lot. A house here and there, probably spec builder doing that. There are some people doing some things with commercial property and changing around, but I don't see a whole lot. Now that we've loosened up these regulations and people are free to suck the rivers dry, and I'm sorry, what are we getting for it?
Mm-hmm.
And in this time we're supposed to be having economic expansion. Oh, we got Patrick in Ferndale. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Eric and Alan. Good show. Good to hear from you both. We're really enjoying it down here. Thanks for your kind comments, Alan, regarding the Indivisible Ferndale group down here.
Are you sure there's not an ordinance there against your Indivisible being there? That's a joke. Sorry.
Well, I'm going to do everything I can to avoid there being an ordinance.
There you go.
Appreciate that comment, too, Eric. Thank you. I was thinking about the East-West Rail. I've been involved in a couple of the Harbor Working Group meetings talking about that project, and it's actually one of the advantages to our harbor port. I actually just came back from a nice port up at Grays Harbor in Aberdeen, Washington. It's the next nearest, closest port to the eastern markets, if you will, in the Pacific there. So the Humboldt Harbor is actually closer than all of those. So if we do an east-west rail, it's basically to offload containers from different vessels, trucks that come in. We don't have the capacity here on the coast to handle all that truck traffic. But certainly, if you can get over someplace like Red Bluff or, below Reading, there are areas there where there could be the rail terminus from east-west that could hook into the national rail system. So this would actually be the cheapest port for folks throughout the Pacific to ship into America.
And what makes this cheapest? What makes this cheaper than San Francisco?
The distance. We're a day closer than most other ports. Also, there's no... there's no waiting time. A lot of downtime is spent in ports like Long Beach and Los Angeles, San Francisco, Oakland, in actually waiting for a berth to get in and offload your cargo. So you have a lot of folks stacked up in those busy harbors waiting, whereas there, and it also takes them a day longer to get to some of those points from the various markets, on the other side of the Pacific that we are either getting goods to or buying goods from, as far as shipping in and out of the U.S. So it really is an ideal use of the Humboldt Harbor, and they made some real inroads up in Grays Harbor in Washington State because of having a rail terminus, that goes to the bay so that they can offload containers. And that is the next nearest place to those markets, but they're a day further, takes a day further to get there than it does to the Humboldt base. Right. So,
well,
yeah, we sit in a good geographic location.
If there is an economic basis for it and it can be done safely and environmentally, I would support it. I would have no problem with it. I just... You know, I haven't really seen the whole vision. I go to every state and to every website that's, you know, made the proposal. And great if it can happen and people will actually use it and we don't just build the thing and then it gets unused. Well, great. If there's that much traffic coming in that the ports are all jammed and waiting and we're going to draw some of that, then I'm fine with it. But
the lady that called earlier had a really good point in regard to you know, wood craftsmen, wood products. Obviously, we are still a lumber, or you know, have traditionally been a lumber area, as was Grays Harbor up in Washington. And one of the things that that they've done up there is they've made a really good use of developing laminates. You know, taking the wood and creating laminate flooring, which is usually what you see out there nowadays. So
right.
Just converting some of that industry and then having the ability to ship in and out and be able to create products like that are amazing. And of course that's bigger business than a boat craftsman or someone that's you know, doing ship rebuilding, but that's another
possibility. Hey, Patrick, thank you for calling. We've got one more caller I want to try to fit in before we get to the top of the hour, but thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks. Keep up the good work, guys.
Well, you too in Ferndale. That's
you bet.
Good. All right. Who's? I'm sorry. Can I have that name again?
Larry.
Larry, you're on the line.
Yes, my name is Larry Otker. I'm the executive director of Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District.
Mm-hmm.
And so I heard you guys talking about development around the bay, and I couldn't be more excited about the things that you guys were talking about. And I just wanted to let you know that we're working on a whole host of things to try to promote economic development around the bay. And to create new living wage jobs that are sustainable and kind of match up with the environmental values that we have here in the community.
That would be great. Is there, I mean, how, if people want to get involved in that, what do they do?
Well, they can call me at the Harbor District.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just look up the Harbor District on the webpage or stop on by. I'm there most of the time. Me and my staff will be able to kind of help you out or point you in a direction where maybe you could help us.
Sure.
About a few things.
Are you looking for are you putting together a comprehensive plan? I mean, there's a lot of different ideas and they all kind of, you know, everything from the cruise ships coming in to the East-West West Railroad to expanding the oyster and all of that. I mean, is there like a harbor plan, kind of like there's a general plan, or is there work towards?
There is. The Harbor District, yes, there is definitely a plan, and we're working on updating the revitalization plan for Humboldt Bay, and just a couple of things, just to kind of brief on that. Right now, there's a new fiber optic line that's going down 299, the right-of-way acquisition and all those kinds of things. The Harbor District, we have an exclusive right to negotiate for a new trans-Pacific fiber optic line that'll connect in with the fiber optic line that's going down 299. And then the company will do a new Trans-Pacific pipeline that will connect us directly to the countries in Asia. And it'll literally be landed right on the Samoa Peninsula. And so we'll be the link, the closest link between Asia and the rest of the United States, right there at the former pulp mill.
And this would, if we're talking about drawing in a few high-tech businesses, that might give us the bandwidth to do it, right?
Exactly. And then the, you know, the big tall building, when people look across the bay and look over, mm-hmm. that's actually a 17-story building. That's the biggest building on the coast between San Francisco and Portland, I believe.
Wow.
I didn't realize that.
No.
Yeah. And it's basically right at the base of right where this big internet hub connection would be.
Yeah.
And so right now we have applications before the County Planning Commission to kind of do... the first phase, where we have 27 businesses now that are working in the former pulp mill. And then as part of that agreement, we have to do basically a master plan for everything from the pulp mill to the Samoa Bridge of what will the future development of that look like.
Listen, we're getting real close to the top, but as you've actually inspired a whole show. So maybe we'll talk sometime about doing
a
whole show.
Well, you inspired me to call in, and so I really congratulate you guys for talking about these issues. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
All right, we got a minute left. Alan, closing thoughts.
Closing thoughts. You're going to put it on me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, where do we go from here? What just in less than a minute? Any ideas about what you want? Or you can plug what you're supporting in November.
Well, I think where we go from here is we just have to continue to engage voters. We mm-hmm. have to continue to educate the voters and let them know who's who in the zoo. Who's running? Who's supporting them? Follow the money, and get out and really support for and vote for progressive candidates.
We're gonna need a flow chart for the Eureka City Council elections.
We'll get there,
but we got Arcata elections and everything. All right, Alan, thank you very much, and we'll have you back in.
Thank you. Yeah.
To talk. I remember we had you before at one time.